time to tee it up with On the Tee, talking the wide world of golf from the PGA to the Champions Tour, LPGA, college, high school, and the crazy world of the Hack Nation. And here's your head of the Hack Nation and your host, Mike Rickard.
Welcome to On the Tee. I apologize for a little technical difficulties that we've encountered this morning. We're down here live at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. And our these are the things that take place, young man. You're getting a you're getting education.
Crash course.
In live radio.
Right.
We are live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios. I'm Mike Rickard, across from Oscar Garner III. Everything will be smooth now. The Big O, kind enough to come down and join me. We've got 3 hours of great conversation today, as we do each and every Saturday down here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. And we are at Ferg's in the heart of Champa Bay, where he's been serving people for 29 years. I got to get my A game on again, brother. We're right across from Tropicana Field. A lot different than last week, if you remember. We right before the Orioles game, and very quiet, with the exception across the street. You'll hear a little background destruction from time to time. Mm-hmm. Ferg's is not being torn down. It's the old police station. In fact, I think I saw about 50 ex-felons throwing a party when I saw the police station being torn down a couple of weeks ago.
You'll hear them yell across the street.
Yeah, they'll be joyous. Anyway, we will be talking. We've got great conversations today. We're going to talk to Ben Murray. He's the head professional at Pasadena Yacht and Golf Club, and we'll talk to Ben about his career and that track. In fact, my good friend Barry Smith is a member over there. And then, of course, we'll raise the bar on the show, as we do each and every time he joins us, and that's John Rieger. Yeah, you name it, he has done it in the world of golf in the great state of Florida and across America. And I just got a thumbs up from the most important man down here, and that is my man Kenny Knowles, monitoring, as well as Joe Boudreau up on the controls, and Big Ed up at Tantalk. I want to thank you for getting us on the air on time. Okay, we had talked a bit about the RBC Heritage. Mm. Why don't you go over the leaderboard today? That's kind of, I talked to Lynn Strickler, the growler, the gentleman that, I don't think I've introduced you yet. He was on the bag for 16 PGA professionals, rated in the top 32 of all-time caddies in the world. And he came down Monday, and we visited before the Rays game. And he talked about this event being kind of a party, compared to, you know, the tension that takes place during Masters Week.
Right.
All week long, these guys are, you know, they're on their A game. The intensity is incredible for the caddies, for the whole team as they have them now. And he said, when you get up there to the RBC at Hilton Head, and he said, people just relax. It's a completely different environment. I've been watching the last couple of days, and it looks like maybe Justin Thomas did party a little bit too much. He's not playing on it. And I had picked him to win this event. But let's go over that leaderboard, Big O.
Well, start with JT. You know, day three is already off to a good start. JT's minus three going into the...
He barely made the cut.
Barely made it. But tied for 30th right now. He's got Haas and Martin both on either sides of him. Starting with the leader, we got Patrick Cantlay coming in at minus nine. He tees off at 2 o'clock with Streb, who's going to be minus 17 off with him in the same group. Yeah, Tringle minus 16 off at 150. But to go back to RBC and Hilton Head being a party, between RBC and Waste Management, those are two of my events that I know. People go there and they go to have a good time. It's not the usual tight collar that we get at the Masters. But I'm excited to see how this tournament plays out. So day three, par 71, guys. We're going to see what's going to shake out here. My eyes right now are on, this is a pretty stacked leaderboard right now, but Spieth is minus five, tied for eight, going off at 1 p.m. He's always somebody you want to watch out for, and he definitely wants to get vengeance after, you know, the showing he put out at the Masters. So we'll see what shakes out.
You know, we'll talk to John Rieger about this, and I was watching Jordan Spieth this morning, and I was thinking about that poor young man. He, he got a green jacket and two runner-ups, and he's a Texan, and when you take a look at his career since that success, it just hasn't been to the expectations. And I'm wondering if Scheff might have those same issues. I hope not. He's only 25 years old. But I certainly hope that he does not encounter.
Well, how old is Spieth?
Jordan's got to be about 30 right now.
Okay. I still remember him as a young baby-faced guy.
Well, and a great guy. And I certainly look forward to today's action and tomorrow's too.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Talk about waste management. Why will I get our next guest on? Because without a shadow, it used to be the Phoenix Open. I went to the Phoenix Open.
Yeah.
That was chump change compared to the party that exists now with waste management, with 200 some thousand strong on the course.
Well, you gotta love it because waste management is where the everyday guy feels welcome on the golf course. You know, the Masters, like I said, is a little bit tight collar, a little bit more country club. This is more if you brought the community course to the tour, right? I had friends who went there, sent me pictures of them teeing off. What hole is that? The that par three.
16.
Everybody tees off into 16. I mean, that's one of the legendary holes in golf. You know, I play PGA Tour on my Xbox, and I always go to that. I always go to that hole. Still haven't holed in one yet, but. That everybody feels like they get a chance when they're at the Waste Management Open.
All right, well, let's talk to this gentleman. He's been patiently waiting, and I'm sure he is very busy on a Saturday over at Pasadena. Hi, Ben. How are you this morning?
Good. How you doing today, Mike?
Doing real good. I think we did have a brief conversation right when you took over the job. If my feeble old mind can recall that. We had a little technical difficulties getting off the tee box, if you will, this morning, so I apologize for you having to wait, but I appreciate you coming on, and you know, it's another Chamber of Commerce day in St. Petersburg, and right down there.
Absolutely.
At Pasadena, absolutely is. So let's talk about your background, where you came from before you had to put up with Barry Smith as a member. And I'll be pimping him in the next hour when he gets down here.
Yeah, I'm from this area originally. I came from PGA National down in Palm Beach Gardens, where the Honda Classic is each year. And I worked there for about 4 years before coming over here about 9-10 months ago now. But I'm really enjoying it back over here on this coast.
Well, you know, when you take a look at the responsibilities down there versus here, what are some of the differences? I've been on your wonderful course before, and of course they
sure.
Was it a couple years ago when they redid completely 3 years ago the entire golf course?
Yeah, Dr. Jeff Panessa, he bought the course about 5 years ago, and really put a lot of work into it. And our superintendent Adam Flynn's, you know, got this place where it's green grass everywhere. It's all past palm grass now. So replanted all the grass, and from tee to green, it's all past palm, which is a saltwater resistant grass since we're right here on the water, and it stays green year round, which is pretty cool.
Well, yeah, the only way I'm getting on, well, Barry might let me drive the cart sometime, and if you saw my game, you would run me off within half a second because of the gorgeous job that your groundskeepers have done. But you have quite a few charity events over there throughout the course of the year, don't you?
We do. Yeah, we do have some events throughout the year. The Pollywogs are an organization here in St. Pete that raise a lot of money for charity. We host a couple of their events throughout the year. We host and raise money for the First Tee. We actually have the First Tee kids come out here quite often, and they have their own membership through that organization where the kids can come out and play golf, and really good thing for them. You know, I grew up in that First Tee program, and back when I was in it, we were at Mangrove Bay all the time, and that's, you know, just where I really learned to love the game and get out with kids that were my age and play. And, you know, I'm a big supporter of that program and believe in that.
You know, when I was up north, I was heavily involved in First Tee. In fact, I'll reach out to you. I need a contact name down here. I'm still kind of like a northerner outsider.
Sure.
And we were behind it in Des Moines, Iowa for the the Champions event we had up there every year. We would have the First Tee kids come out, and I'd throw some of them on the air and have some fun. But I think it's a fabulous movement to continue. And, you know, seeing Tiger last week at the Masters, I mean, these young players today are the face of golf. However, they're just not a brand yet. Tiger's still a brand, and he built – I got a 23-year-old sitting across from me who was a caddy up at Oakland Hills. And it's his demographic that was involved in First Tee and even your age. And I think we need a resurgence in that.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, to your point, I mean, Tiger really got that going in the 90s, and it's the reason I'm in golf, that my dad got me into golf, and, you know, a lot of guys that are, like you said, in the 25 to 35 kind of age range that, you know, Tiger got that boom going. And I think that golf is, you know, seeing a bit of a resurgence here. We have a lot of younger members of the club, you know, younger guys and their wives and kids, and you know, it's good to see that at the club, and golf's becoming kind of a cooler sport again to play, you know, so it is good to see that going on now.
You know, in fact, Barry's working with the Women of Color Golf Foundation, and, You know, I don't know if you've seen the movie King Richard, but on the girl side, they need a story like that. They need somebody to take the lead and really brand that. Serena Williams, obviously, and her sister have done that in tennis. But on the women's side, and this isn't not a slight to them, but the South Koreans, you know, for the most part, were dominating the scene. And we've got a couple young ladies down in Bradenton that are raising the bar on the U.S. thanks to Nelly and Jessica Korda.
The Korda sisters, yeah, they're certainly
what a great
getting more American interest in it, right? And you got to have a homegrown hero to, you know, garner interest, like you said. So, you know, we're lucky we have Brittany Lincecum here at the club as a member, and she does a lot for the ladies here, and you know, she even has our club logo on her bag, you know, as she's going around on tour. And you know, she's a great role model. Even for me as a kid growing up, she was always around that first tee program, you know, and helping raise money for that. So
I met her, where was it, at a restaurant, and I don't typically want to bother anybody, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, but for some reason, her husband had come to get a massage from my girlfriend and a facial at her spa, and so that's how that conversation opened up. And she's a great gal.
Yeah, very friendly. She's always willing to help out with anything we ever ask from her. And her and her husband, both great people.
Oh, no, I remember exactly what happened. Now the girlfriend came home and said, "Hey, have you ever heard of a Brittany Lincecum?" And I said, "Well, of course I have. Oh, I didn't know if you'd heard of her." And she was in the spa, in the salon today. I said, "Thanks for inviting me over." I said, "I would have come over and had a conversation to talk about on the air." But then we saw her again out to dinner, and just down to earth person.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest changes of moving north?
Yeah.
And your home, I mean, that's got to be great. Where'd you go to high school at?
I went to Calvary Christian High School. We had a pretty good golf team when I was there. You guys that went played Division One college golf and turned professional, and I went and played Division Two golf in West Palm Beach, Palm Beach Atlantic. I enjoyed my time there, and my parents still live in the area, and I've got a son now. He's 1 year old, and my wife's pregnant with our second boy coming as well. So it's good to be home and have family around up here. You know, as far as the position wise, I am the head pro at Pasadena now. It is a lot of responsibility. We got 400 golf memberships here, you know, that's not including the wives and the kids and everybody. So it's a very active facility. We run a ton of events throughout the year. You know, as far as what's coming up, we have this pretty cool thing called Tournament of Champions, here in mid May coming up, where we have four majors throughout the year for everyone to play in. And the winner of our four majors, they all compete in this thing we call Tournament of Champions, and the whole club kind of follows them around for those couple days, and they kind of feel like they're tour pros, you know, and everyone's following them and watching, and our champion is our champion golfer of the year and gets the parking spot at the club and everything. So it's kind of a fun thing that we do at the club that's a little different than any other club that I've really seen.
Really, really creative. Hey, do you guys ever? I'm asking because this young man across from me caddied at Oakland Hills. Do you guys ever have a need for caddies over there? Not that he's looking. I'm curious.
We don't have caddies throughout the year here. Really, not much of a need for it with our membership. A lot of guys like to just kind of walk on their own or just take a cart. You know, for that event, those guys will have caddies with them. Just, you know, whoever they want to bring in as their caddy. But, you know, on a daily basis, we don't have caddies here.
Well, he has some great stories he'd shared with me, and I hearken back to the old days, you know, when there was caddies and the Caddy Shack stories out there.
Yeah, I bet.
Okay, so did JD, John Daly's son, you gotta call him Junior now. Did he go to Calvary Christian? He went somewhere up there in the Clearwater area, didn't he?
I don't know where he went. I don't believe so. Yeah, I know that he plays quite a bit out of, I think, Clearwater Country Club.
Well, I was with JD 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Up at Clearwater Country Club.
Yeah.
He plays on Fridays. He plays a skins game with some poor suckers. And but I think they just throw their money at him so they can hang out with him and have a few laughs.
Yeah. Well, I'm good friends with the McClymans up there, the pros up there. And I went to high school with Harrison. He's an assistant there. And
They do a great job up there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're good guys.
We're talking to Ben Murray. He's the head professional at Pasadena Golf and Yacht Club. Is that correct? Golf and Yacht Club?
Yeah, Pasadena Yacht and Country Club.
Yacht and Country Club. There you go.
Yeah.
If you look at that, you may not know you have a golf course, but it's absolutely spectacular. And I look forward to one day, like I said, maybe I could just be his beverage hander to Barry Smith.
We'd love to have you out, Mike. And if I'm having, you'd let me know.
If I'm handing him beverages, I'm going to be tired by the end of the day. I know that, though. It's going to be a long day, Ben. I saw you guys jam-packed for Easter weekend.
We are, yeah. Lots going on. We got Easter egg hunt. Going to have the kids running around. And there's a lot going on with our brunch. And I think we got over 400 people booked for just for brunch and lunch tomorrow. So it'll be a good time.
All right, my man. Well, I appreciate you taking time. I know it's not a good time to get a hold of you. But later in the year when it slows down a little bit, we'll have a little get-together down here. You come on down, Barry and I, and I'll buy some beers and beverages. And someone a little smarter than me is going to ask a question before we let you go.
Yeah.
First off, I heard you had a one-year-old. Congratulations to you and your family. But I have a question.
Thank you.
When is it appropriate to get the first golf set? When does that start?
The first golf set, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually, last week, just bought him a putter. We went and got him a little U.S. Kids putter. I, you know, for any kid, I would say to start out with a U.S. Kids set. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Kids stuff is just the top notch for kids. It's the lightest shafts. The biggest problem with kids getting into golf is, you know, trying to cut down dad's old shaft, and it's just way too heavy for the kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And the club, they just can't swing it right, and so make sure that, you know, you get them a light enough club that they can handle it. I would say, you know, once they get to being, you know, 4 or 5 years old, that's when they can really, you know, you can get one like a basic U.S. Kids set and get them 3 or 4 clubs and just get them out and just have some fun with it, right? You know, once they get to be 4, 5, 6 years old, and then get out and have some fun and swing the club and do it that way.
Well, Ben, you just made my Saturday because I'm flying to Iowa at the end of the week for my grandson and granddaughter's second and fourth birthday parties. And my son was a D2 golfer. And I think the old man just figured out, thanks to Ben Murray, that U.S. Kids, I didn't even know that brand existed. So thank you, brother.
Absolutely. Yeah, look them up.
Now you can have 2 beers. All right, man. You're gonna need some beers. You're gonna have, like my son, you're gonna be running around in your poor wife while you're at work. You're back to back. I thought 2 and 4 was tough. Yeah. All right, Ben.
Buddy.
Happy Easter, man.
Happy Easter. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Good question, Big O. I needed that information.
Well, my dad started me off with the plastic set, like the super baby plastic set, then got me my first putter, just like he said. Because, if you're a golfer, you know where the money's at. He was like, you don't need the driver, you don't need any of that stuff yet. You need a putter, you need to learn how to roll, you need speed, you need to figure it out. And then we upgraded to the regular club. So I'm always thankful my dad started me off on the short game.
Was your dad's first name Earl?
No, no. get out of here.
He started at what age?
When did I start? I was probably like 2 when I got my first little set. I don't even remember it. I just know the pictures.
You're listening to On the Tee. We had a little rough stuff start. We had a quadruple bogey to get off the air, and we've seen people rally from that, right? maybe we give ourselves a par in that conversation.
We're one under off that conversation.
Okay, we're one under after our conversation with Ben Murray, and we're live down here at Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill. It's our 19th hole getaway, of course, and each and every Saturday we're down there having conversations and trying to talk to local pros. We're efforting John Rieger right now. One thing I do want to do while we effort John is, there he is. Well, maybe, why don't you go over that Masters board in case somebody was out of the country, didn't...
Right, so let's start it back.
I want to talk a little bit about that.
We got Cantlay, who 66-67 through his first two rounds, is now -9 going into day three. Streb, -7, teeing off in the same group at 2 o'clock, 68-67. So he's within two shots. Tringle, -6. Notable names, we got JT, who is our illustrious host favorite, is moved up to tie for 29. Still at -3, though. And then let's see who else we got. Spieth at -5, tied for number 8.
All right. Well, we got John Rieger on to raise the bar. Happy Easter weekend, John. How are you, my man?
Fantastic. Happy Easter, everybody.
We had a little difficulty getting off the tee box from a technical perspective, so you really got to raise the bar. We need an eagle for the last half hour. How about that?
Well, as long as I get 2 strokes on each nine, I'm good to go.
I get 2 strokes on each hole, and that's not good to go. So let's get your professional analysis of the 86 Masters last week, because we saw it all. We saw profiles in courage. We saw a cool hand Luke. We saw some names that we didn't think would fall apart. But Augusta does that, as you're well aware of. So let's get your perspective, please.
Well, I mean, the Masters is one of those tournaments that's unlike any other. You know, it's a tournament that's at the same golf course every year, but it's its own tournament too. I was doing a little research on it, and I read where back in the 30s, before the Masters Invitational Tournament was created, Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts petitioned the USGA to have a U.S. Open there, and the USGA turned them down. So they started the Masters. They started their own tournament. So it's a tournament like no other, really. So it's a major championship. It's got a lot of elements of the other major organizations, the RNA, the USGA, the PGA of America, the PGA Tour. Yeah, they all actually pitch in and help and volunteer and do things in conjunction with Augusta National. But it's just so unique, and it's actually, to me, and this is something that's been covered for years and years and years. The famous writer, sports writer Grant Lynn Rice, wrote about, you know, the spring doesn't really start until you get a chance to get down to the Masters for golf. So I think that's a pivot point for most fans out there, especially the ones that may not look at the Masters as a, you know, avidly. You know, they might be folks like me, I like to watch the Daytona 500, you know, every year, but I'm not a big NASCAR fan, but I enjoy watching that. So it's just like somebody who doesn't really watch a lot of football watches the Super Bowl. So there's a lot of non-golfers that absolutely love the Masters, and I think that even though the tour is in full swing, and I think that the Masters is one of those tournaments that everybody just kind of waits to get crazy about it. So that's one of the fun things about it. And so, you know, obviously you've already nailed it. You've already nailed all the storylines and Scotty Scheffler, what a great person he is. And, you know, in the competition, how hard it is to win any type of tournament. So, yep, it's good. It's great. Everybody's got to feel good about it. And, if for our listeners out there, if you want to go to the Masters, you can get in a lottery. Just stay close to masters.com, and they allow people to register. And you go and you put your name in the hat and you say, okay, I want to buy some tickets, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. You pick out, you know, the days, as many days as you want or what times you want, and you can get in a lotto and win tickets. And you actually have to pay for those tickets, but they don't gouge you. You know, it might be $50 to go on Saturday, so it's not like a gouge. So, I encourage everybody to do that. And I physically have known people who won, you know, my own hometown up here in Gainesville, Florida. So, it's a real lottery. And, my favorite time to go to the Masters is actually on a Wednesday. because you get to watch the par 3 tournament, you walk around the golf course, and then you go home and watch it on television for the rest of the week because it's a lot easier to see, because when you're there, it's so crowded, you got to pick a spot and watch versus a lot of most PGA Tour events or USGA events, LPGA, you can just pick a group and walk around if you want or see a bunch of different groups.
So $50, the lottery? I thought maybe I heard
you wrong. And I'm just paraphrasing that. The price has probably gone up a little bit. I don't think they did it during the COVID years here, so I think that I think they're going to reinstitute that. But it was around that price last time I saw it.
My word.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the tickets, the reason they're so expensive is because people buy and sell those tickets. You know, you're not supposed to do that if you're a patron. You got to be able to, you're not technically allowed to do it, but they're different ticket companies, hospitality companies. People sell their tickets all the time.
Well, yeah. In fact, I know some friends that actually bought badges when I lived in Iowa, a group of them. And this guy, he had an operation. I mean, you'd fly into South Carolina, he'd have the badges ready for you. It was turnkey. He'd have a house for you to rent and then transportation. And I met the guy. I didn't get an opportunity to attend. I met the guy when he came to Iowa because he had such a pipeline there. And they're very successful on that end. I don't know how you would ever stop that. I don't think it's ever going to stop.
Well, years ago, I had a friend of mine. His girlfriend bought him 4 tickets to the Masters. And I told my friend, you know, we'll all go together, but I don't need a ticket because as a PGA of America member, you get to go into the Masters. Now, I can't bring my family or anybody else like you can at any other event. But so it's kind of a really nice perk, and it's a privilege, and it's a fun thing to do. So I told him, listen, you know, we're getting ready to cross Washington Road there to go into one of the gates there. And I said, okay, now I'm gonna go to that gate right there. I'm going to walk right in. They just didn't believe me. So I'm getting ready to walk over there. So they finally said, okay, and we're walking across the street, and we look down, and we find a ticket on the ground.
Oh, my God.
So somebody dropped their ticket, but you can't really, like, who do you turn that into? You know, scalpers everywhere. Hey, did you drop a ticket? Or, you know, you could go to the front office there and turn it into the ticket office, but they're not going to really, they don't even know who owns that ticket. So we used that ticket to pay for the whole trip. It was great. We ate. We didn't have to eat McDonald's. We ate at the steakhouse every night.
Oh, my word. Now, what year was that? How many years ago was that?
Oh, boy, this has probably been about 20 years ago. So it's been quite a number of years.
Because I would think in today's world, they probably have the capability of matching up your ID with your badge to prevent that happening. But
well, they probably had that in place then. But the problem was, is what if that poor soul sold his ticket, and then we turn it in, like no good deed goes unpunished, and then all of a sudden the Masters revokes his ticket privileges for life because he sold his ticket to somebody.
Oh, never
so,
thought of it.
We were recipients of good fortune. It was a fun Masters. Been up there many times to watch, and from a spectator standpoint, they're very innovative. And most of the things you see that the Masters does, you see the other PGA Tour events pick it up down the road. You know, LPGA included, just from television and electronics, and their digital presence is unbelievable. I didn't even turn my TV set on. I just watched it on my tablet the entire time. It was great.
We're talking to John Rieger, PGA of America professional out of Tallahassee, and you name it.
He's not Tallahassee. Gainesville.
Gainesville.
Oh.
Tallahassee's going to be in the house.
You guys from the Midwest come down here to Florida, you better get your geography right
I'm preparing for my next hour. I've got Tallahassee in the house.
Here you got the Smith family there, father and son in there to talk. Of course, you know, Barry can talk Seminole football, but his son Andrew is pretty unique. He can talk Georgia Tech football. He's also, I think he's been to Florida State, and he's been to Florida for advanced degrees. So, you know, this kid's got it covered everywhere.
Yeah, he's got some different alliances, and I actually saw the Iowa-Georgia Tech game in the Orange Bowl. At that time, I was there. I didn't know that he had played in it. So we've had a little fun with that. Iowa unbelievably won that game. So we're going to have a lot of fun. So I do have a problem because I got Ferg down here, and he's a Tallahassee guy. You're a Gainesville guy. It was a lot easier, Iowa City and Ames. You know, just two simple things to think of.
Now, I went to school without a football team. I went to the College of Charleston, so I'm actually a Cougar from College of Charleston. So we're so I can root for anybody's football team. I happen to live in Gainesville, so if you live in Gainesville, you better root for the home team. If I lived in Tallahassee, I'd root for the home team.
Hey, I got to ask you a question. Speaking of Gainesville, have you been to Coach Spurrier's new restaurant? Is it cool? Have you been there?
Oh, it's fantastic. Spurrier's restaurant is absolutely fantastic. It really is. He's got, you know, I mean, if you enjoy memorabilia, especially if you like Coach Spurrier, and the menu is just fantastic. He's got a partner in there named Freddie Weeby, who used to own all the Domino's franchises in Gainesville, and he was like three times the number one franchisee in the world. So Freddie comes to him with, you know, with a lot of marketing experience and restaurant background, and they have just truly put together a special place. If you're driving up and down I-75 and you need to pull over to Celebration Point where Spurrier's restaurant's located, because it's fantastic. It's like three stories tall. They've got you know, bar upstairs, downstairs. They've got all kinds of different rooms in there. They've got a museum of Coach Spurrier's memorabilia. They have a bar upstairs called Visors. And so every visor that he's owned, that they put in a big glass case. He's got a lot of visors.
I was fortunate to meet him. You know, I don't have any allegiance to any of the teams he ever played for or coached. But I just felt so fortunate to meet the guy. I loved his enthusiasm. I don't care what anyone says. I love people that have passion and enthusiasm, and that cat certainly does. And he certainly loves the game of golf, doesn't he?
Well, he loves the game of golf. He's a fierce competitor, too. I played in a charity tournament one day, and now this is probably, gosh, again, you know, a long time ago, maybe 25 years ago, and we had a little $5 NASCAR, so I won. I won $5 from him. I had to chase him down at the banquet to get that $5, and I made him sign it. I made him sign it, too. He didn't like that, but I made him sign it.
He was.
But he's an avid golfer. One of the things that just came out, you know, he had a book come out not too long ago, and one of the things he did when he lived here in Gainesville, and it was a big secret. I have a good club pro friend of mine named Walter Smith, and Coach Spurrier would, if it was a home game, he'd go out in the morning like crack of dawn and play nine holes. And he would do that even during the Tennessee game, which in those years, that was for his biggest rivalry. You know, it was much more than the Seminoles. He was really into this, you know, Tennessee when they had this great team. And he would actually go play golf before home games, but my pro friend had to keep it absolutely secret because they want the public to know that he's out playing golf, you know, on a Saturday before a home game.
Especially if there was a loss, he'd never hear the end of it. Michael Jordan was infamous for that, too, many times, getting a quick nine in before even playoff games back in the day.
Well, you know, one thing that's interesting, too, with Coach Spurrier, you know, I moved to Gainesville in 93 to work with Gary Player to build a golf course called Hale Plantation. And so, you know, I saw Steve Spurrier in the supermarket one day, you know, getting a six-pack of beer. You know, and no big deal. There's Coach Spurrier. He's a football coach, and he's getting a six-pack of beer. No problem. No one would bother him. He just happens. Nowadays, you know, if you're the coach of the Gators or any other team, you're like a big celebrity, and you know, you got to almost have your own security. Everybody wants a piece of you.
And you'd be labeled a drunk with a six-pack in your hand. unless they're winning. If they're winning, that's the problem with social media today. They had quite a crowd there for their spring game, though, the other day, now that they got a new guy at the helm.
Well, they did. You know, Coach Napier went ahead and did a Thursday night version of the Orange and Blue game versus the Saturday version because he wanted the kids, instead of going home for Easter, because it happens to be, yeah, it's not on Easter weekend every year, but this year it's on Easter weekend, and he decided to move it to Thursday night so he'd get more attention. You know, for recruits and things like that for the game, you know, because it was on ESPN Plus and SEC Plus, and so you could stream the game. It was a Thursday night, so he wanted all the students to go. Because that's been a real issue for college football. I know this is a golf report, but for college football, you've got a lot of the fans aren't students. And, you know, in fact, the average fan of a college football team is actually, you know, in their 40s and 50s. So, you know, it used to be where you'd go to a college football game, the students were prevalent. I mean, now there's some colleges out there like Texas A&M and stuff and Alabama. They get a huge student turnout. But you'd be surprised even at the University of Florida, they don't get the students to turn out for the football games like they used to.
Well,
that's something that Coach Napier, I think he recognized that and just trying to, you know, get the students more involved. And I think it's good for his recruiting, too. So, anyway, you know, obviously when you're the brand new football coach, you haven't, you know, you've got a perfect record. You're 0-0. So, you know, we'll see how the fall goes and what everybody, all the instant gratification of the Gator fans here with the, if they'll just give them time to build a winning program.
You know, we can talk about this. We're a variety show, if you haven't noticed. Anyway, one of the things that disappoints me, and you just hit the nail on the head, is, and it's prevalent in society today, but in the state of Florida, and last year is a prime example, I've been out and watching a lot of the high school talent in this state, and to see Florida State, Miami, not finish in the top 25, and to be out of the top 10 in recruiting, was unbelievable to someone in the Midwest who's been covering sports forever and seeing the incredible talent down here, John.
Well, it's only going to get worse in some aspects with the name, image, and likeness now that's prevalent out there, you know, where I think that the NCAA allowed this to happen and the state legislatures went ahead and legislated. But I've heard of, like, one of the Tennessee football player recruits. They put a fund of millions of dollars together because this one recruit, if he goes to Tennessee, he'll have a couple of million bucks in his pocket. You know, I'm sure he'll have to, you know, go appear in a commercial and do a few things here and there. But I think that the reason why you had talent drain from Florida, the three major schools, is the fact that there's so many other schools playing football. And some of the kids think it, you know, hey, listen, they want to go play in the NFL. And sometimes they may go to a non-Power 5 school just to have that opportunity because they get to play. Or they'll go to another conference that may not be as strong as the SEC, where there'll be a third-string backup here, but they could be a starter in the Pac-10 or something. So, you know, when you start looking at all that, you know, it's a huge recruiting war. It's not as regional as it used to be, you know, where kids would stay in their state and they'd stay close to home. And if a kid left and went to a college somewhere else, it was a big deal. But now it's just like, you know, Florida's got to do a better job recruiting in the state because that's where everybody's coming to recruit their football players. But at the same time, you know, it's always going to, I think, just going to get, it's going to be an arms race of how much money outsiders and programs can raise for the name, image, and likeness. And I hope it doesn't hurt the minor sports. I hope it doesn't hurt women's sports because, again, you know, if all that money is going to be funneled primarily through football to begin with.
Well, John, I couldn't agree with you more. And the transfer portal option, it sickens me seeing what's taking place. I mean, heck, the kid from Oklahoma, the quarterback, was one of the early favorites for the Heisman. His coach takes off for USC, and you know where he's going. And sure enough, that's where he's at. And it's just the greed that the NCAA created a lot of this issue themselves, in my personal opinion, and I've had a lot of guys smarter than me, Chris Griffin and several people, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
You know, Bobby Bowden summed it up the best. I had the good fortune of playing in one of his spring golf tournaments. I played with Barry over at Smith over at Temple Terrace in one of those, and they had a banquet afterwards. And this is a room full of seminal football boosters, you know, and playing in the golf tournament. And somebody asked him a question. You know, this is right after he won the national championship and Sebastian Janikowski was on the team. He goes, hey, coach, you know, Sebastian was out till 4 o'clock in the morning hanging around Bourbon Street. And why didn't you suspend him? Why did you let him get away with that, you know, on the eve of the national championship? And Bobby Bowden summed it up, and I was shocked at his answer, and I was shocked at the question that the booster asked, but I was really shocked at his answer, but then I realized how prophetic he was. He goes, gentlemen, college football's a business. You think I'm going to give up a $12 million payday because my star kicker, who's obviously, that's his personality, that's what he does, you know, he's just never going to behave to begin with, and suspend him and not win the national championship? It's a business, everybody. So a lot of people's, you know, faces you could see where it was like the loss of innocence or something. You mean college football's a business? Well, you know, college football's like pro sports right now. It's pro sports. It just has a little different pageantry, and it has, you know, a little different, you know, spirit because you're rooting for your school and your town, and the players, you know, keep changing back and forth all the time. But, you know, that happens with the NFL now. I mean, who can imagine years ago that Tom Brady won the Super Bowl with the Bucks. You're like, how could he ever leave New England? He is New England. Well, no, now he's the Bucks, and you know, and who knows? He play one more year of the Bucks, and he might go down and you know he'd go play with you know the Oakland Raiders or something, or Las Vegas Raiders. Dating myself now because they moved to Vegas.
Well, John Rieger with the Golf Report. If you're wondering, folks, why he knows so much, his father played in the NFL, and certainly you grew up around the NFL. And had you gotten just a little bit bigger, maybe you would have been an NFL player. But you chose a easier on your body lifelong career and have been very successful at it.
Well, you know, one of those things, my dad always encouraged me to play golf, and he'd rather see me as a golfer than a football player. And I remember one day I came home from high school football practice and, you know, sprained my ankle, and I looked at him and I go, I don't want to play anymore. I don't want to play football. I just want to play golf. And he looks at me and goes, good. And then we moved on from there.
That simple. Hey, we got about 3 minutes. Quickly, do you worry about Scottie Sheffield going down the same path as Jordan Spieth with that early success and so many things pulling away at him? Or he just seems like a really grounded guy. He's 25, got a young wife,
Well, you know, Jordan was, you know, he wasn't a hellion or anything. He was a pretty grounded guy. But you know what? Golf's a fickle thing. I mean, you know, the longevity of a golfer, it's really amazing when you see somebody like Tiger, Nicklaus, Mickelson. These people stay out there for 20 years, 25 years. Okay, that's hard to do. You know, that is really hard to do. So you can get really hot. He's hot right now. Will he remain hot? I don't know. Will his body hold up? We don't know. So that's why in golf, when you get it when the getting's good. And if you, you know, if you get a streak, you ride that streak. But it's happened all along, too. Tom Watson, you know, for about 4 or 5 years there, he was unbelievably streaky. Won all his major championships and won a ton of tournaments. And then it took him like 10 years to win another major. I mean, it can happen. I wish him the best. I think he is well-grounded. I think that when they picked him for the Ryder Cup, and he didn't win hasn't won a tournament, and somebody picked him for the Ryder Cup, you know, they're all looking at the American side going, why'd you pick this guy? Well, now we know why.
Yeah, well, I'm impressed with him, and, you know, I wish him nothing but success. Watching the RBC today, and I had a caddy on, and Lynn Strickler, the growler, and he was on, and he said, when you leave the Masters, going up to RBC is like a party week. You just, like, exhale, and everybody just kind of chills out.
Well, I've got a good friend named Greg Russell. He performs under the big tree right there where all the boats are parked at the marina. He's done it for like 40 years. He sang the national anthem, I think it was Tuesday when they fired the cannon, you know, and he sang the national anthem for that. He's quite an entertainer, and he lives right there at Hilton Head. And, you know, the players really like that tournament because golf course isn't exceedingly long, but you better hit straight there.
I see
that. And just such a great week. It is party week. I remember when they had the COVID restrictions, you know, most around the country, you couldn't go anywhere, you know, or if they had a restaurant, you're limited. It was party hardy there. The places were packed. Everybody, the beaches were packed. Restaurants were packed. And that's just the way it is. It's the event for Hilton Head, and Hilton Head's really grown, too. And well, it's such a beautiful, affluent place to play golf and take your family.
Well, enjoy your family this Easter, John, and I certainly appreciate you taking time to join me and Big O right here on the tee.
Yeah, that was quite a golf report. When all we talked about was football, but we'll do a football report next week, and then we'll talk about golf.
How about that, my man? All right, I look forward to it. Have a great weekend, and I appreciate. And
all right,
didn't mean to butcher the town you live in either. All right, my man. That's
Take
John
care.
Rieger, and from the Ferg Sports Bar 19th Hole Clubhouse, I'm Mike Rickard for John Rieger, the Big O, and, of course, Ben Murray, Joe Berdrow, and Big Ed on the controls. Thanks for listening as we look forward to sharing the great game of golf every Saturday from 11 to 12 on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. Stay tuned for the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show. God bless you, God bless America, and hit them straight.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.